The Index Astartes, a history of the Space Marine Legions and subsequent chapters, where appropriate, up to the 13th Black Crusade. The Salamanders. As one of the first founding chapters, the Salamanders have a rich history that goes back to the very birth of the Imperium. Salamander Space Marines are raised from the populace of Nocturne, a deadly volcanic world. Such a world breeds hardy warriors, strong of constitution and single-minded in purpose, ideal recruits for the Adeptus Astartes. Of all the stories of the Emperor's Primarchs, the legend of Vulcan is among the better-known tales. The Prometheum Opus, a source of much imperial knowledge of Vulcan, it tells of a mighty comet blazing a trail of fire across the skies of the world of Nocturne during the time of trial, period of great upheaval, when the planet was racked by massive earthquakes and volcanic eruptions. Whether these signs heralded the arrival of the Primarch, none can say. The world of Nocturne was a harsh, volcanic place, a land of rocky crags and soaring, basalt mountains, with little to offer its early colonists save the riches of its vast mineral deposits. For as long as anyone could remember, Eldar pirates had plagued the people of Nocturne, constantly pillaging the small settlements and enslaving their children. As a result, Nocturne's people were hardy and practical, with little time for rest or leisure. It is said in the Prometheum Opus that the Primarch was found one morning by a blacksmith named Nibel, as he entered the yard of his smithy. Whether the Primarch was found as a babe in swaddling clothes or as an infant child is unclear, but the unknown child's presence in a smithy's yard was unusual enough for Nibel to bring the boy before the ruling council of his settlement. For many of the long Nocturne years, the wise men had prophesied the arrival of a savior, a warrior who would come to them from the heavens to rid them of the decadent Eldar. So it was that the people instantly recognized the greatness within the infant that Nibel had found. No one dared claim the Primarch as his own, and thus it was decreed that Nibel would take the Primarch as his son and apprentice. The Master Smith named him Vulcan, after the first king of the Salamanders, the giant lizards that roam the volcanic mountains of Nocturne. Vulcan's growth was extraordinary. Within 3 years, he was bigger and stronger than any man in the settlement, and his mind was sharper than any Nocturne-forged blade. He had rapidly learned all the skills of metalworking taught to him by Nibel, and soon surpassed even his adopted father's renowned ability. It was Vulcan who taught the people of Nocturne the most hidden secrets of metals, the mysteries of pattern welding, metal folding, alloys, and bonding. These lessons had improved their already considerable skill at weapon making and artifice. The Opus tells that during Vulcan's fourth year, the Eldar came to his town, intent on raiding and pillaging. The people of his settlement had long become used to the Eldar's raids, and had devised many ingenious methods of hiding from their attackers. Vulcan declared that he would hide from no one, and, over the pleas of the wise men, stood at the center of his settlement with his smith's hammers crossed over his shoulders. Stirred by his courage, the men of the settlement rose from their hiding places in attics and cellars to stand beside Vulcan in defiance of their attackers. Vulcan stood at the forefront of the defense and single-handedly slew 100 Eldar that day, wielding a huge blacksmith's hammer in each hand. The raiders fled from Vulcan's wrath, and the story of the town's triumph spread rapidly across Nocturne. Soon the headmen of the 7 most important settlements traveled to pay homage to Vulcan and praise him for his example in fighting the Eldar. The headsmen swore never again to hide in fear, but to face their foes and crush them. It was decided to hold a huge gathering of the people of Nocturne to celebrate this great victory, including a massive contest of skill at arms and craftsmanship. In a passage of the Opus known simply as the Outlander, there is a tale of how Vulcan came to be reunited with the Master of Mankind. It recounts that, at the opening ceremony of the celebrations, a stranger appeared at the gates of Vulcan's settlement. All the stranger asked was to be allowed to take part in the contests, and though he would not say where he had come from, he was allowed to compete. His skin was pale and his garb outlandish, though all could see that he was a powerful figure. He announced to the gathered spectators that he could best any man in any contest. The gathered crowds laughed uproariously believing that none could be superior to their superhuman leader in intellect, physique, or skill. Vulcan and the stranger wagered that whoever lost was to swear eternal obedience to the victor. The competitions lasted for 8 days and included many feats of strength and endurance. At the anvil lift, even the strongest men could hold an anvil above their head for only an hour and a half. But Vulcan and the stranger carried their heavy anvil aloft for half a day before the judges declared the contest a draw so that they could proceed to the next event. And so it was that they were almost equally matched in skill and strength. Occasionally, one would slightly best the other, but when it came to the start of the final event, the salamander slaying, they were evenly matched. Each had a day and a night to forge a weapon with which to hunt down the largest salamander they could find. Whoever could bring back the heaviest carcass would win the wager and the eternal allegiance of the other. The ringing of hammers on metal echoed across the volcanic hills for a whole day, neither man pausing for a moment to rest or refresh himself. As the nocturne sun sank below the mountains, the competitors watched the highest peaks for the fire plumes that gave up the sign of the giant salamanders. Vulcan boasted that he would climb to the summit of Mount Deathfire, where the largest fire drakes could be found, huge fire-breathing monsters weighing as much as several tons. The stranger nodded in agreement and said that wherever Vulcan went, he would follow. It is claimed that the two climbed the precipitous mountains with astonishing speed, bounding from rock to rock, the stranger carrying a keen-edged blade, Vulcan with his immense silver-headed hammer held ready. They passed from sight, but soon the skies echoed with the clamour of battle. The flames of the fire drakes licked the clouds of smoke that gathered over the volcanoes. Vulcan was to find his prey first, smashing its armoured head from its shoulders with a mighty sweep of his hammer. Further up the mountain, the stranger spied another salamander, even mightier than Vulcan's conquest, and set off in pursuit. As Vulcan carried his prize back to the settlement, ill fate beset him. Mount Deathfire erupted into violent life, hurling rocks and lava high into the air. He was flung from the edge of the precipice, where he clung for several hours by one hand, the other grimly holding the tail of the dead salamander. Vulcan was determined to keep his prize, no matter the cost. As the mountain continued to erupt, Vulcan knew he could not hold on much longer, yet still he refused to release his grip on the salamander. Just as Vulcan's grip was beginning to slip, the stranger appeared, calling his name from the other side of a wide lava flow. Vulcan answered the cry, and could see that the stranger's prey was indeed larger than his own. By now, even Vulcan's almost endless constitution was growing slim, weakened as it was by over a week of hard competition. His grip was shaking, but he was too proud to call for help. It seemed that the stranger realized the Primarch's peril and hurled the corpse of his salamander into the lava, making himself a bridge to cross. With great leaps, the stranger hurled himself towards Vulcan and hauled the wearied Primarch from the edge of the abyss. Even as Vulcan felt himself being pulled up by the stranger's strong arms, he saw his opponent's salamander being consumed by the lava and swept away. When the two returned to the Primarch's settlement, it was the ruling of the judges that Vulcan had won, for the stranger had returned with no prize at all. The gathered throng cheered heartily, but were silenced by Vulcan. As they watched, he knelt on one knee, bowed his head to the stranger, and said that any man who valued life over pride was worthy of his service. The stranger bade Vulcan stand and threw off the illusion that had disguised his true form, revealing himself to be the holy emperor of mankind. The people of Nocturne fell to their knees in awe, and from that day forth, their world was to become home to the Salamander's Legion, in memory of the mighty beasts that had united the Primarch and his lord. Homeworld. The Salamander's chapter hails from a binary planetary system in the western reaches of the Ultima Segmentum. The two worlds, Nocturne and its oversized moon, Prometheus, circle each other in an erratic orbit, causing massive tectonic activity across the thin crust of Nocturne. The world is girded by chains of active volcanoes and rent apart by frequent earthquakes. Once every Nocturne year, some 15 Terran years long, the two worlds approach so closely that Nocturne is almost torn asunder. Known as the Time of Trial, this period is marked by tidal waves sweeping across the rough seas, the ash and smoke from thousands of volcanoes blotting out the dim light of nocturne's sun, and the ground being gripped by constant earthquakes. Towns and villages are thrown into ruin, the continents shift, and a cold winter envelops the lands for the next quarter of a year, freezing the young and killing the majority of the livestock that can survive the normally harsh and hot climate of the planet. Some would say that the people of Nocturne are mad to endure such conditions, but over hundreds of generations they have been moulded by their world into a hardy race. And Nocturne's time of trials brings great rewards too. The upheavals open up veins of precious gems and metals and uncover vital ores for smelting. When the lava flows cool, they can be mined for other precious elements, pockets of gas that can be used to power engines, diamonds and other crystals valuable to the Adeptus Mechanicus for lasers and energy transformation systems. And this is how Nocturne survives, by trading its vast mineral wealth with other worlds, using its resources to bring in additional livestock, building materials, and the few weapons that the Salamander Space Marines cannot construct themselves. The chapter's fortress monastery is based on the giant moon Prometheus. It is the only settlement on Prometheus and is little more than a spaceport linked to an orbital dock where the chapter's strike cruisers and battle barges can be refitted and restocked. When not at war, the chapter's warriors spend most of their time on Prometheus or living among the inhabitants of Nocturne. The Salamanders maintain very close links with their homeworld and mingle with the people rather than living aloof, as many other chapters do. The Salamanders are the settlement's leaders and a source of inspiration and guidance for the Nocturne populace. Young aspirants crave this position of authority and respect as much as the chance to become a legendary warrior of the Emperor. Salamanders' recruits start very young, with a hopeful coming to work as an apprentice to a salamander at the age of 6 or 7 Terran years. Apprentices spend several years learning the skills of the smith, as Vulcan did in his early life. From these apprentices, the most able are judged by the chapter's apothecaries and chaplains, and the worthy are taken to Prometheus to undergo the biosurgery required to turn them into space marines. At various points in their adaptation and training, the young scouts must endure the same trials and tests that Vulcan and the Emperor competed in, their final initiation culminating in them hunting down a salamander and slaying it. Combat Doctrine. The Salamanders follow normal Space Marine tactical and strategic dogma with a slight variation to compensate for their own physical and mental traits. The Salamanders have a preference for close-ranged firefights and use many melter and flame weapons to smash armored foes and burn whole swathes of lighter troops. Coming from a society that places great prestige in craftsmanship and that has a high regard for artisans, the Salamanders have access to and can maintain highly sophisticated forms of technology. This is most evident in the number of Terminators in their armies, as well as a greater proportion of Artificer armor and master-crafted weaponry. Their technological resources are also supplemented by regular trade with the Adeptus Mechanicus, made possible by Nocturne's abundant mineral resources. Organization. The Salamander's chapter organization was laid down when Vulcan swore allegiance to the Emperor. Each company was founded from the 7 greatest settlements of Nocturne, each commanded by a captain from that settlement. This organization is still maintained today, although, ever since the disappearance of Vulcan some 1,000 years after the Legion's founding, the captain of the first company has been given the role of chapter master. This position is considered a regency by the Salamanders, who believe that one day Vulcan will return to lead the chapter in a great campaign to conquer chaos. Each company is slightly larger than a standard Codex company, and squads were reorganized following Rebute Gilliman's writing of the Codex Astartes after the Great Heresy. The conditions on Nocturne are not conducive to training for high-speed attack or using the anti-grav engines of land speeders, so the chapter employs relatively few of these specialized fast attack units. The Apocrypha of Skaros lists the Salamander Scout Company as one of the smallest known in any chapter. The sparse population of Nocturne and the Salamander's slow and meticulous selection process yield a low turnaround of new recruits. The first company is treated as a warrior cadre within the headquarters itself and forms the personal guard of the chapter master. They are known as the Fire Drakes, after the largest of the salamander lizards that roam Nocturne. To enter the first company, a warrior must be nominated by his captain for the honour, and then must prove that such faith was well-founded by slaying a Fire Drake. The Hall of the Fire Drakes in the Chapter Monastery on Prometheus is adorned with the hides from Fire Drake salamanders slain as part of this trial. Beliefs. The beliefs of the salamanders are governed by the Promethean cult, which places great emphasis on self-reliance, loyalty, and self-sacrifice. Many of these values stem from the lessons learned while training as a smith. Patience and relentless determination are highly valued mental characteristics. The hammer and fire are important symbols in the teachings of the Promethean cult. Ritual scarring by branding and burning is commonplace among the battle brothers of the salamanders, and trials of walking over burning coals and carrying red-hot metal bars are held frequently. The Third War for Armageddon. When Gaskell launched his new offensive against the Imperial forces on Armageddon, the Salamanders were one of the first chapters to respond, sending a full six companies to combat the Orcs, including Chapter Master Tushan, who personally led his Fire Drakes. The Salamanders launched several counterattacks against the rock forts landed by the Orcs along the Hemlock River, preferring the close-quarter fighting within the maze of crudely carved tunnels within the rocks to the long-range duels in the desert. The Salamanders made the Orcs pay a high price for their audacity. By the start of the Season of Fire, at least nine rocks were destroyed by the Salamanders' attacks, killing untold thousands of greenskins. The Salamanders, unlike a number of other chapters, fought extensively throughout the campaign to protect the civilian population of Armageddon. Indeed, it is rumoured that Tushan himself came to blows with Captain Vineyard of the Marines Malevolent after it became known that his men had shelled a refugee camp simply because there were orcs within the perimeter. The majority of the Salamanders departed Armageddon following the Season of Fire, with only two companies remaining to protect the major population centres. A squad of the Chapter Master's own Fire Drakes also left for Baal with the Blood Angels as an honour guard for the fallen Captain Tycho. The Chapter's Tech Marines have been instrumental in repairing and rebuilding the infrastructure required to maintain such a vast amount of people, and it is certain that they have saved many thousands of lives with these vital but often overlooked duties. Tushan, Chapter Master of the Salamanders, Regent of Prometheus. At the outset of the Second Armageddon War, Chapter Master Tushan had only held his rank for 3 years. To do battle against Gazgul Thraka would be a hard test of his skills as a leader and strategist. And it was with no hesitation that the humble Tushan agreed to follow Commander Dante of the Blood Angels. During the campaign, it was Tushan who helped rally the scattered Imperial defenders. In battle, Tushan and his Fire Drakes were responsible for defending one of the few bridges across the Styges River against a 1,000-strong Orc speed freak column, and for fighting continuously for 3 days and 4 nights. At the end of the campaign, Dante himself sought out the young Chapter Master and praised Tushan in front of all the Blood Angels. This was a supreme gesture. For the Salamanders, no greater honour can be bestowed than the respect of one's brothers in arms. Tushan is known to have met Yarrick, and it is claimed that the two had an instant respect for each other. Yarrick heartily welcomed Tushan's offer to once again defend Armageddon when Gaskell returned at the head of the mightiest Orc force ever seen. Tushan fought throughout the war zones of Armageddon and Hive Tempestora. Tushan prevented the Orcs from overrunning the Katarine water purification plant and condemning the Hive's population to a slow death by dehydration. The Hive ultimately fell, but Tushan's actions allowed the majority of the Hive's population to escape before the Hive was captured. And as before, Tushan's inspiring presence allowed the defenders to hold the vital Styges Bridge and prevent the Greenskins from crossing and reinforcing their forces elsewhere. Gene Seed. As far as can be ascertained, the Salamander's Gene Seed appears to be stable and as yet uncorrupted. The reflexes of Salamander's Space Marines are not as fast as those of other chapters, although they are still quick when suited in power armor. However, it is unknown whether this defect is due to a problem in the Gene Seed being raised on their high-gravity world or the chapter's doctrines against hastiness and impetuosity. The Salamanders have never been great in number, and were the smallest of the first founding legions. Perhaps it is for this reason that there seem to have been no second founding successor chapters formed from the Salamanders, while the other legions were broken down into several smaller fighting forces. Others point to the disaster at Isvan V as reason for the lack of second founding chapters. It is a matter of debate whether there have been successor chapters during subsequent foundings, although it appears likely that many scholars point to similarities in physique, markings, and tactical dogma of chapters such as the Storm Giants and Black Dragons. Recent questions regarding the purity of the Black Dragon's gene seed has led to some genital biologists questioning the purity of their source zygotes. But the legacy and reputation of the Salamanders have led to their detractors being openly ridiculed. Battle cry. Into the fires of battle, unto the anvil of war. There we go, we have the Salamanders. Vulcan's boys! And what a merry band they are, bunch of bloody do-gooders. It's nice to have them, though, as a good reflection of the Space Marines. You know, you've got other Space Marine chapters that probably do think like this, who act like this, and it only becomes apparent when they're working alongside other Space Marine chapters in terms of their respect for human life. Yeah, as defenders of humanity, they're really weird in the 40k universe because they seem to have a really, really big respect for human life and civilians compared to other Space Marine chapters who don't generally care. It's pretty funny, really. It's a pretty funny juxtaposition, if that's the right word. Probably not. Anyway, thank you everybody supporting the channel. I hope you enjoyed this one. It's a bit shorter than normal. Thank you all. I'm gonna go. See you later. Bye bye.